A lot of interesting things to cover today. Make two main topics are Haggadah and some details, and Hadacha. Haggadah is, of course, kashering something in boiling water. Hadacha is something, is just rinsing or washing something that doesn't need any more intense kashering. It's like the simplest form of kashering. So, Haggadah, let's see what page we're on here. We're really, today we're talking more about the basic concepts of each topic, and then I hope to get into some more practical examples next time. So, if you look on page, really starting on page 312. So, if you look at, we're going to start on the sheet. Gemara and Avodah Zarah, it first asked, at the very end of the Masechta, the last daf, it said, how do you do Libun? And it said, oh, you have to heat up the metal until the outer layer comes off. So the next thing it asks is, that part's cut off at the top of the Hebrew here, v'chetzad magilon. How do you purge utensils with boiling water? How do you do Haggadah? Amar Rav Huna, yora ketana besoch yora gedola. You immerse a small kettle, a small pot, inside a large pot of boiling water. Meaning, you, to cover the whole thing, to be able to kasher the whole thing, you have to immerse it into the boiling water. Now, does that mean every part has to touch, has to be under the water at the same time? It does not mean that. We'll talk about that more later when we talk about the practical parts. But that's the basic way to do Haggadah, is dipping it inside, meaning something that, and we'll see this language again and again, we already saw it from a Brisa in Avodah Zarah, I believe, that if you use, the way you use a utensil is cooking, meaning with a liquid medium, or with a liquid, then the way to kasher it is through cooking, which means dipping in boiling water, and this is how you do it. Yora gedola mai. What do you do if you have a large kettle? Meaning, the biggest one you have. How do you kasher that? That you can't, there's nothing to dip it into. So tashma, so come in here, an approach, a solution. Dahu duda, there was a cauldron. The Havai Bei Rav Akavia, Rav Akavia had it in his home, and he needed to kasher it. Ahadar lei gedanfa delisha apuma. He made a rim of gedanfa, literally means a frame, but he made a rim of lisha, which is the word for kneading, it means dough, on around the lip of the pot.
And that's on Pesach.
Yeah, the Shulchan Aruch says to use mud on for kashering something for Pesach. So anyway, you make a rim, malyuha maya v'artecha, and then you filled it with water and boiled it. So you got the picture here. So like, let's say this is our pot. So the rim would be around, that it would be like stuck to the outside, so the top rim would be exposed of the pot, and it'll just be surrounding the whole outside. So you're filling the water above the rim. The water is going to be touching the whole top rim of the pot, not the outside, but just the inside and the top rim. So why do you have to do this? Why don't you just boil up water in the pot? Amareva, man chakim lemevad ki ha milsa. Who would be clever enough to perform such an action? Ilav Rav Akavia, if not Rav Akavia. The Gava Rabahu, who's a great man. Kasavar, so he holds, why is this work? Meaning, shouldn't you have to dip the whole thing in a bigger pot? Maybe you can't kosher something that can't be dipped. No. Kasavar kibolo kach polta. The same way it absorbed the tray for the forbidden, or the chametz, or whatever it is, kach polta, that's how it expels it. Ma bolo b'nitzotzos, af polto b'nitzotzos. So what Rava seems to be saying is a little bit confusing, this explanation at the end, but the problem is that when you're, the way Rashi explains it, which I didn't bring here, the problem is if you want to just boil up water in the big pot, why do you have to make the rim? That's the question. Why do you need this rim of dough? So the way that he's explaining it here is that, and the words, again, the words of the Gemara don't sound like this, is that if you don't build the rim around it and you just fill it up as much as the pot goes and then you boil it, so you won't be koshering the top surface of the rim. Why? Because, and you need to kosher it because it gets treif. Now how does it get treif? Because drops of liquid splatter up and hit the top rim. So if that's the case, so then shouldn't it be enough to kosher it by boiling water in it and let drops of water hit that top rim? And why should you have to make the dough thing around it? So Rashi explains that since the drops are unpredictable and inconsistent, when you're using a kli, let's say it was used for clam chowder many times, then those drops will fly and hit all these different parts of the rim. But maybe the one time you're koshering it by boiling water in it, it's going to spray up and hit the rim, but it might not hit the same spot that it hit. It doesn't consistently hit every spot, unless maybe, you know, you boil it up, you know, twice, you know, hundred times, maybe it'll hit all the places. So to avoid that uncertainty, you build the rim and you just fill it up to that place, and then you'll have boiling water koshering the rim, the entire rim, guaranteed.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking, by the way, you said that. So let's say you didn't do the dough rim, right? So you just koshered it without the dough rim. So now the inside of the pot is fine, and the rim is not okay. So you could have a pot that's like part of it. You have a pot that part of it is good, part of it's bad.
So yeah.
If you cook something inside, it'll be okay, but if it touched the outside, then it'd be a problem.
I guess. I'm not sure if it's discussed exactly how that would work and what, you know, it could be it's worse than that. Maybe if you don't kosher part of the pot, it's going to contaminate somehow, even if it's not touching it. I don't know, but at least what you're saying, if it touches that part, then it could absorb non-kosher flavor. Yeah. So, okay. So, according to Reb Berkowitz, the Gemara here has two different approaches. You have Rav Huna. The first opinion was you have to dip it you have to dip the pot into another pot. Right, that was the first approach. So you could just read this Gemara that everyone agrees here, right? Meaning that was talking about a small pot. Oh, what do you do about a big pot? There's another solution for that, and there's no different approaches. Berkowitz, however, detected two different opinions here. That Rav Akavya is really being mechadesh, that meaning according to, he's being mechadesh a more lenient way of koshering with hagala. According to Rav Huna, the only way to kosher something that needs hagala is by dipping it into boiling water. According to Akavia, you don't have to dip it into boiling water, meaning you can kosher a pot by cooking in the pot. The exact way that the pot became treif by cooking clam chowder in the pot, right? You didn't immerse the entire pot into the clam chowder. You just cooked, it was only inside the pot. It didn't touch the outside. So Rav Huna would say, according to the way he's understanding, doesn't matter, you have to dip the entire pot. That's the way you do Haggalah. Even though clam chowder you never immersed it in the clam chowder. But Haggalah means dipping the whole thing in. According to Akavia, no. If you dip a whole, if it's a ladle where you do dip the whole thing in, or, you know, most of it, then you have to dip it into boiling water. If it's a pot where it's only in the inside, you only have to kosher the inside. That's Akavia's approach. So it's subtly different. They both interpretations of kibolo kach polto, the same way it absorbed, that's how it expels. I mean, according to Rav Huna, that rule only tells you which kashering method you use, right? Do you use Haggalah? Do you have to use Libun, right? Do you have to use direct fire? But once you know what type of kashering you have to do, then there's only one way to do it. You dip it in. According to Akavia, it doesn't only tell you which of the processes to do. It tells you how to do that process. If you dipped it into treif, you have to dip the whole thing in. If you just cooked treif in the pot, you just have to kosher the inside of the pot, and that's enough. And there's other ramifications to this as well. Take a look at the Rush. It's the next source on the bottom right. So he says, this is a Rush Pesachim, he says, Nekot ha'klala b'yadecha, sorry, I don't have this in English, hold this principle b'yadecha in your hand, meaning take this rule with you. De'mani de'a'a u'deparzala, a utensil made out of wood or iron, v'shar mini matechos, or other types of metal, ubormi deglala, or some, I think this is some type of thing made out of dung, dishtamesh behu chamira kuleshata, that use them for chametz. Chamira is an Aramaic word for chametz. Bekli rishon, in a kli rishon, meaning in a pot on the fire, meaning if you used your steel or iron ladle in a pot, or a wooden ladle in a pot on the fire, you have to do Haggalah in a pot that's on the fire. Udish, and now that's pretty obvious. Now this is the important part. Udish tamish behu bekli sheni. But if it's a ladle you never use, let's say it's a decorative ladle, you only use it to serve with from the table, and a kli sheni. Take the pot off the fire, put it into a serving bowl, you bring it to the table, then you use the ladle in the kli sheni to serve into bowls. Avid lehu Haggalah b'kli sheni. That only needs Haggalah in a kli sheni to kosher that. But if the clam chowder was always, if this was only used for clam chowder and kli sheni, you don't have to dip your ladle into a pot on the fire. It's sufficient to dip it into a bowl of hot water that was never on the fire. It's just poured from a pot that was on the fire. So the Rush seems to be saying that kibolo kach polto, the way it absorbed is the way it expels, tells you not only do you need libun or Haggalah, it tells you how to do the Haggalah if it absorbed the prohibited flavor in a way that was with less heat, then you're allowed to kosher it that way as well. So he has this leniency, he has this kula in Hilchos Haggalah. So, we're going to see, now let's see one more point about this. Is there any other way to kosher a big pot aside from this whole, like, making the rim with dough? And what if you have what if you have something you need to kosher that's like that can't be put on the fire, let's say. Let's say it's just a big thing. You put hot, it's a grinder. It's like a, it's a millstone or something. I don't know. We're going to see an example of this where you can't, it's not a pot you could put on the fire, but you put hot food in it. How do you kosher that? You could blow a torch. You could do libun. Yep, we saw that that does the same as hagala. So we're going to see another approach. Take a look at Rabbeinu Yerucham on the left here. Rabbeinu Yoel Halevi. So he's quoting this Rabbeinu Yoel Halevi. Lo haya osa safa liyora. He had a different approach. He didn't make this lip around the pot. Ela mashlich eish o evan or sachas. He threw fire, which means he took a coal or something that was on fire. So first he filled up his pot with water. He boiled it up. Then he took something burning or a hot or a stone that was heated up on the fire till it got red hot. But oh, shamayim roskim, as when the water is still boiling in the pot. But haroskim. So if you ever try doing something like that, it makes it boil very rapidly, and it goes over all the edges. Haroskim olim al sfasa. And then they go over the edge, meaning it's not like the typical splattering. If you just boil a pot regular, a little bit splatters on the edge. If you throw a hot stone in there, it blows up all over the place, and it guarantees goes over the edge. The chenagu b'machteshos shel evan hagedolim. That's how they also do in these big grinder, or what do you call like a mortar and pestle, but like a big one, some type of thing to grind up stuff. She'en yecholim lachnisan biyora. You can't put it into a pot. Mesimim baham mayim roschim. You pour boiling water into it. So this thing you can't even put in the fire. This is what I was talking about before. Umachnisan besochem evan rosachas. You throw a red hot rock in there. Va'ola harasicha b'chol sfasa. Or sfasa, the letter got cut off. The boiling goes up over the whole edges. Okay, so then that kashers it. There's someone who writes that this whole rock, hot rock trick doesn't work. You have to make that lip. The only way to do it is to make the lip. So, let's see how we pass. If you look on page 313. So, if you used it, a hot you cooked with a hot liquid in a utensil, or like a ladle or whatever, the same way you used it, that's how you kasher it. Im tashmishan bikli rishon, if it was a pot on the fire that you used, it could go in kaf, like a spoon, shemagisim bo bakadera, that you used to stir a pot on the fire, tzarech lekshirim bikli rishon. You have to do it on a kli rishon. On the fire. Vim tashmishim b'klisheni, if you only used it at the table in a bowl for serving, haksherim b'klisheni, you can kasher that in a klisheni. So he's passing here, like the Rush said, that Kigolo Kachpolto tells us that even this kula, that you can kasher it, you don't have to kasher it more than the way it became treif. V'klishishimishtam shebo b'iroi. Let's say you pour, pour from a pot directly into the thing. Shema'ara mikli rishon. Lo sagile behekshe de klisheni. You can't kasher that in a klisheni because Eroi is hotter. El etzarech laro salam mikli rishon. That you have to pour from a pot. Okay. This note here is important. Kashering a klisheni, right? We mentioned kashering a klisheni. It's only lechatchila. Bidiyevit, if you used it without kashering, we saw before, the food is permitted, but not on Pesach. If you used a klisheni bowl, let's say a serving bowl that you use for chicken soup with matzo balls, for serving at the table, and you use it accidentally on Pesach, if it's a treif bowl and you use it during the year, you're allowed to do it, because bidiyevit, we say a cliche and he doesn't need to be kashered. But on Pesach, if you put your kashul of Pesach soup and matzo balls in there, that you have to throw it out. Like, it becomes trash. Okay. Now he brings a thing about the sink, right? The sink is a klisheni, but hot water pouring from the tap in the gray box down there, the boiler is a klirishon, right? So this is pouring. So how do you kasher a sink? You have to pour boiling hot water from a pot. Okay, we'll talk more about that. Okay, now he quotes this thing about an Evan Maluban, the hot stone. So you see the Shulchan Aruch paskins this way. Ukaros gedolo shelo yuchal lahachnis toch kli rishon yitein alein Evan Maluban. So big pots, you can't put them into a bigger pot. You put a hot stone in them, the RLM rose chemically rishon, and you pour from a pot that was off the fire, Bahavi kli rishon, and that's considered like a kli rishon, even though there was no fire under it. That hot rock makes it that way. In any similar case, the aver evan al kol akli, you take a tool and you pass the hot stone all over the place, then you do hagala on the whole thing, like a kli rishon. Now the Mishnah Berurah says, so we saw that in the Rabbeinu Yerucham, he quoted Rabbeinu Yoel who came up with this technique, and there's someone at the very bottom, he said someone disagrees. You can't, it's not good to use it. You can't use an Evan Maluban. You have to use the dough around the top thing. So the Mishnah Berurah is concerned for that opinion. He writes there, Mishnah Berurah rules that this method is only effective in a case such as bowls, where most of its usage was not as a kli rishon. We'll talk about what he means more, most of its usage. However, it requires pots that were usually used as a kli rishon to have the conventional hagala. Meaning, in some cases we allow this hot stone, but the Mishnah Berurah does not consider it the same as an actual pot on the fire. Dovar Gush is something we'll come back to. We said that if you have, let's say, hot potatoes or hot tray of meat and you put it on a plate, even though the plate's a kli sheni, it's still considered a kli rishon because the Dovar Gush, it's something solid, so it retains heat more. So if you used, so plate, even though it normally be a kli sheni, but if it had hot tray of meat on it, then it's a kli rishon. So how do you kasher that? So the Mishnah Berurah, he actually doesn't quote the Mishnah Berurah here. He quotes the Prima Gadim. He said that type of plate, even though it's kli sheni, but it's a davar gush, it has a halach of a kli rishon, you have to dip that into a pot that's on the fire. You can't just dip that in a kli sheni. Yeah.
I was just looking a little more over here, like what we said before about the Evan Maluban and Shohara.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds a little different, though, than we had in the Rabbeinu Yerucham, right? Because here, Rabbeinu Yerucham is saying specifically about how, like, you just put in the stone and then it makes the water surge up over the top and go over the rim. And here, he doesn't really say anything about that. Even so, it's all gold.
That's a good point. I believe in a different... Rabbeinu Yerucham had both these cases. His main reason for bringing this was to give an alternative to the rim, to building a thing on your pot. But then he said that the same technique is used in these things that are used to crush things. And in that case, you can't boil water under it, so he's saying put the rock in and then pour the water on top of it. And that second case is the one the Shulchan Aruch is talking about. That's why he says to move the rock around the whole thing. And the first way, if it's just replacing the lip technique thing, then you just dump it in and it sprays all over. Yeah, I mean, depending on how big the pot is, you know, maybe if it's huge, then it's only going to spray it over on this side. Maybe, you know, maybe you have to do it twice, but... Okay, Zaya, kashering with steam. He quotes the Prima Gadim again, that if a utensil absorbed tastes with steam, then you can kasher it using steam. Kibolo kachpolto, that's how a microwave is kasher. Again, this is something we'll come back to because this is something that is very commonly you come across this issue of kashering with steam. Okay, I want to go now. David, if it's too long for you, you don't want to make you stay. I want to do this topic of hadacha. It's a slightly different topic. It's going to take a few minutes. Alex, you can stay. You have enough time?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is on page 2 of the sheet. So these are really, these are psukim that we really could have seen when we started this whole sugya of kashering, but it's most relevant to this issue of hadacha. That's why we waited till now. This is the source in the Torah for kashering. I think maybe we did see it briefly in the very beginning. The source in the Torah for the obligation to kasher treif kalim. So before that parsha comes up, this is in the war with Midian. They just won the war. So it, the first pasuk says, "Atem chanu michutz lamachaneh shivas yamim." Anyone who was in the battle and killed someone has to stay outside the camp for 7 days. Kol horeg nefesh v'chol nogea b'chalal. Anyone who killed someone or touched a corpse, tischatu b'yom hashlishu v'yom hashvi, atem ushvichem. They have to cleanse. He has to cleanse himself. This is talking about the using the ashes, the par aduma, and going to the mikvah, and it's the impurity of coming into contact with the dead. This is relevant for the Mishkan, for the Beis HaMikdash. Right today, we're not concerned about this, but that is something that all these soldiers had to do, and their captives. And then the next pasuk is talking about also all the garments, leather articles, everything that is with you has to be purified. Now, Chaf Aleph, Pasuk 21, it says, V'yomar Elazar ha-kohen elan she'at sava, habayim la-milchama, zos chukas ha-Torah, asher tziva Hashem es Moshe. So this is the law of the Torah. Now we're talking about kashering the kelim and another halacha. Aches ha-zahav yes ha-kasef, anything that was gold and silver, es ha-nechoshes es ha-barzel, es ha-bedil v'es ha-ofaris. The copper, the iron, the tin, and the lead. So these different materials, the difference between them is going to come up in a moment. It's very significant what they are. So how do you kasher these different things? Kol davar asher yavo ba'esh, taviru ba'esh. Anything that's used with fire, you should pass through the fire. So this is talking about what type of kashering? Well, I'm not exactly sure which type. I think it's that. Yes, it's. I think it's actually talking about both. We'll see Rashi in a moment. So there was really no wrong answer for that. Ach b'meinida yischata. But after you pass through the fire, it has to pass through the waters of Nida. We'll see what that means in a moment. V'chol asher lo yovah ba'esh, taviru b'mayim. Anything that is not used with fire, meaning something that's only used with cold. Let's say, a plate, just for lack of a better, even though we know plates are used with hot too. Something that's only used with cold, taviru b'mayim. What would be a good example of something only used with cold? Cup. Perfect. All right, as long as it's not a coffee cup or something, right? But a regular drinking cup, right? So anything that doesn't use with fire, how do you prepare that? Taviru b'mayim, you put it into the water, pass it through water. So what does that mean? What is that talking about? So the first Rashi, we're not going to read in detail, but that's making the point first, we're talking about purifying from tumah, from impurity, and now we're talking about how you can use the utensils, the kalim that were part of the spoils, even after you purify them. Meaning, the point is, there's a two-step process here. Even after you purify them because they came in contact or they were with a corpse, still you have to kasher them. Right, that's the whole point. There, he was, for the first time ever, the concept of kashering seemed to have come into play in this story. So Rashi says, "Kol davar asher yavo ba'esh levasho bo kulum," to cook something with it. So he says, "Bishul," maybe he means roasting too. "Tavir ba'esh," I'm at the third Rashi down on the right. Kederech tashmisho hagalasa, the way that you use it, that's how you purge it. Misha tashmisho alide chamin, if it's with hot water or a liquid food, yagilenu b'chamin, then you have to dip it into the water. Misha tashmisho alide sli, if it's roasted, don't hashpod, v'achskula, if it's a spit or a grill, a grate, yilabno b'or, then you do libun and fire, make a glow and fire. Okay, so the first thing is things used with hot. Ach b'meini dal yiskada. Now, what does this mean that you purify it with these meinida? So Rashi has two pshatim. He says a simple explanation is the word nida means sprinkling, and this means what it was already talking about before it got to kashri. You have to purify it from tumas mace, from the impurity of the corpse. And that's sprinkling means with the ash, the water with has the ashes of the paraduma in it. Amar lahem, srichim akelim giul ataramina. So first of all, you have to purge them. You need hagala or libun to purify them from prohibited food. V'chitoi lataron minatoma. And then you have to sprinkle water and I think you have to immerse them in a mikvah too, to take that spiritual uncleanness off. So that's what this is talking about. Rabbi Seinu dar shumikan, but there's a different pshat. Sha'af lach shirim min ha'isser hitin tvila l'kli matachos. Even to kasher them from when a non-Jew owned them, you have to dip them in a mikvah. It's not enough to do libun or hagala, you have to dip them in a mikvah. Umei nida, and the waters of nida in this case, doesn't mean, the word nida doesn't mean sprinkling, it means a woman who is Anita, a woman who was menstruating. Haksuvim kan darshu mayim ruim litbol behem nida. It means water that a woman who's Anita could purify herself by immersing in the kamehim arbaim sa. It's the 40 sa that's required for a mikvah, meaning you have to dip this in a mikvah. So, but not to purify them from tumas mace. What is the purpose of dipping in the mikvah? What would you call this? Halacha, according to the second pshat of Rashi. Does it remind you of anything? Tevilas kelim. This is being tevil, a kli that you acquire from someone who's not Jewish. Taking a kli to the mikvah, right? Nothing to do with impurity, that it was in, there were corpses there. Nothing to do with kashering it. Well, I can't say nothing to do, because you shouldn't use a kli that has not been tevled, but it's talking about tevilas kelim. So there's two understandings of what the Torah is telling us to do here. Is it telling us to purify it from, because it was in a war, or it's saying any utensil that you acquire from someone who's not Jewish, you have to be tevled, it's tevilas kelim. So the next Rashi says, the end of the pasuk is talking about things like our cup, right, that were not used with fire. Kol davar she'ein tashmisho al yedei ha'or, kegon kosos eslochios, right, that's what Rashi says, it's cups or jugs, she'tashmishon betzonein, they're always with this cold, v'lo balu iser, and they never absorbed prohibited food. So what does the Torah say to do? Taviru b'mayim, pass them through water. Says Rashi, matbilon vidayo. You tovel them and that's enough. Vidavka chle matachos. Only metal utensils. Meaning, Rashi says, what do you have to do to a cup if you acquire it from a non-Jew? You don't have to kasher it. You just have to do tevilas kelim. You have to tovel in a mikvah. No, meaning, well, not for being in the, that's, meaning, Rashi is too, when the Torah says, b'mei nida yischata, it has to be purified with the waters of nida, is that referring to tumas mace, because it was in the war? Like, tumas mace, meaning because, just like before this parsha of Heksher Kalim, the first two psukim are about The people had to purify themselves because they came in contact with corpses.
So you can't have a tamei pot?
Right.
I mean, aren't...
So what, you want...
Nowadays?
No, so that's a good question. Why can't you have a tamei pot? I think we'll get into that a little bit in the Ramban, but for sure for truma or anything you use for karbanos, it can't be tamei. For a regular pot that a non-Kohen uses, it probably is okay if it's tamei.
Is cooking transmitted?
I would think so, yeah. Cooking something, or just putting something in the pot even without cooking probably transmits it, yeah. Okay, so let's just see the Ramban. You know what? Maybe we should save... Let's save the Ramban. Let's save the Ramban for next time. But the basic thing I want to take out from this Rashi is first of all, right, we have the basic two parts of this Parsha that talk about kashering. Hot stuff, you kasher it, and then you have to be tovel it, right, according to the second explanation of Rashi, tevilas kalim. And then if it's not used with hot, let's say it's cups, then you just have to do tevilas kalim, right? It doesn't have to be kashered because it didn't absorb anything prohibited because it wasn't used with hot. So it's sufficient to just tevil it. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for joining me, gentlemen.